welcome to the latest edition of the Daggers and Lids podcast. Happy New Year to you all. All of you watchers on our YouTube channel and our listeners via whichever platform you download our podcast from. A very Merry New Year to you. Hope 2025 brings you lots of joy and health and happiness and lots of really, really great cricket as well. And I'm very, very pleased to say Lydia Greenway, who is... I have to say, probably, I'm saying probably because all I can see from my house in Bishop Stortford to your house up in North Leicestershire is your face and part of your shoulder and just about under your neck. I assume, Lydia Greenway, Happy New Year to you, by the way, that you are growing, and that's in a good way.
It is in a good way. I have to admit, I think I'm at the waddling stage now. I think that's the phase where we're at. And there's a lot of waddling. There's a lots of grunts and groans going on. But yeah, I've had a quiet start to the year, actually. Just a little bit of walking, which has been nice. A bit of working from home. And just looking forward to all the cricket that's coming up, because there's so much, isn't there? Well, obviously, the Under-19 World Cups, you're off there next Wednesday, aren't you? Which is exciting.
Looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to going somewhere I've never been.
Yes.
Which is Malaysia. But I've had a look at the forecast, because you do, don't you? When you go away, you're looking at the forecast, whether it be on holiday or whether it be for work purposes. And I looked at the temperatures. Oh, 27 to 30 degrees. Oh, that'll do for me. That'll do for Daggers. A little bit of warmth, he says, sat here on a minus four day in my freezing cold office. It says basically it's going to be thundery showers for the entirety of the time that we're there. And I was like, oh my God, have we come during some kind of monsoon season? So it should be exciting whatever the way, but I'm looking forward to that. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on. But overall, you've had a good Christmas. Santa was kind.
Yes, had a lovely Christmas, thanks, Daggers. I went home back to my family. They're all down in Kent, sort of Kent, southeast London. And it was lovely because everyone was there. So my brother and sister were there. The youngsters were there as well. And we spend it with two other families every year. So we take turns to go round each other's houses, which is lovely. And then the highlight for me is we have a Boxing Day quiz, which actually comes with a trophy, which you would love it. Honestly, it's been... When did we start it? I think we started it back in 1993. And when I say quiz, it's a series of quizzes throughout the day. So we have like a music quiz, picture quiz, headline quiz, drinks quiz. So you have to try a drink and see what it is. So that's always good fun. So yeah, it was nice to be home. And what about you? You had quite a quiet one,
I did have a quiet one, but just let me go back. This is a 30-year-old trophy that the Greenway and two other families. Does it get quite tense?
If you can imagine, because everyone, all the families that we hang out with are all sporty as well. They all like a drink as well. And so that combination over the years has been quite interesting, but it's always good fun.
I can imagine your role, knowing you as I do, and as everyone does, I'm sure, a role of sort of Luxembourg in the United Nations, or sort of Switzerland, where you are the mediator. You are a mediator, and because you can't drink in your current condition, and for those don't know and didn't watch the last edition of the Daggers and Lids podcast, it is just wonderful news that Lydia is pregnant. Due in sometime in February to a baby. We don't know what gender the baby is going to be, but may I just already put my stamp down that Charles or Charlie, great name. Any other suggestions for what Lydia should call her child is more than welcome in the comments down below. Just four or something like that. But Lydia obviously due to give birth in February, so if you weren't aware of that, that is why she is obviously not drinking at this moment in time. So I see you as a mediator. I'm sure you I'm sure you sort of kept battle lines sort of separated, not drawn. And great fun was that. Sounds really good fun, actually. I'd like to be involved in that. Love a quiz.
We all love a quiz, though, don't we?
Do love a quiz. Very quiet for me. Very quiet, just me and Asher and the dog, who is becoming less of a pain. Which is good. But can you see this? Those on our YouTube channel will be able to see that. Now, these are little pop marks on my hand, of which there are about 6 or 7. And that is not his fault. That is my fault for playing rough. So I can't blame the dog for that, but we have a like you know, those tug of war type of things.
Yes,
and he gets very excited, and we've been doing a lot of walking to try and knacker him out, but yes, there are about 6 or 7 pop marks on my hand, which are
they are
blue related. One of them's quite deep, actually, quite deep. And I maybe shouldn't have been playing so rough, but he's good value and he's getting on well, and not vomiting as much as we thought he might, but he still is. Good.
That's always a bonus.
It is. It really is. We're trying not to make him sort of hoover the place up with food that we drop, etc. So probably the worst dog owners in the world, but we're having a giggle and he seems on good form.
Right. Everyone's happy.
Everyone is. Let's crack on, because there is much to talk about and much to preview, because in, well, probably 24 hours or so, a little bit less as the time that we record this, the latest edition of the Women's Ashes will get underway. A lot of build-up from both sides. England recently over in South Africa. Australia having series against India and New Zealand. They've finished their WBBL and everything can focus now on what is a very, very eagerly anticipated Women's Ashes. Now, remember the last time that Australia were over in England, they retained the Ashes despite the actual multi-format series being drawn by 8 points to 8, England winning both one-day international and T20 series by 2 matches to 1, Australia winning that fabulous test match up at Edgbaston, and that is how it played out. And so, with the one-day internationals starting at the North Sydney Oval, it's a difficult place to know where to start. Some of you have been sending questions in. We will get to those in due course. But as an overview, Lydia, where are you sitting at the moment? How do you see things from a preparation standpoint and also playing out in Australia?
Yeah, well, I suppose to start with the preparation, it's been non-existent, really, hasn't it, for England? Their one warm-up game was rained out. The reason they couldn't get out earlier was because they obviously had the tour before Christmas to South Africa, where they just got back literally before Christmas. So that was their only time, really, to recharge and reboot and then obviously head out for the Ashes. So the ability for them to get in proper warm-up games was not there at all. I don't think they'd be using that as an excuse. I don't think they should be. They've just been out in South Africa where the conditions are very, very similar. But in terms of headline opinions on where I think the series is going to go, there's a few things to consider, isn't there? There's the most recent Ashes, which was tight, 8-all, and England played some really good cricket. But I think in between then, both sides haven't played as well as they would have liked to. Obviously, England didn't even make it out of the group stages in the most recent World Cup, and Australia were disappointed. So what I'm trying to get to, Daggers, is I'm always wary of a wounded Australian team on their own soil. I think it's going to be tough for England to go there and win. But of course, every England fan would love it if they did. So that's sort of where I'm at. My expectations is that I think Australia will have the Ashes back or retained. But I would love to be proven wrong. What say you?
It's an interesting one, because I agree with you on the fact that a wounded Australia, one with a point to prove, is not, given the depth that they have in all three departments, is of course a concern to England. On the flip side of that, you know, prior to the Women's Ashes over in this country, in the UK, there was, and I think we would probably hold our hands up and say similar, that Australia were overwhelming favourites, given their record over the previous decade. And to see England put in the performances that they did, to win both white ball series, granted 2-1 and 2-1, I think that will have given them a huge amount of confidence in the fact that they feel that Australia are beatable. And that is a big hurdle to get over.
Yeah.
I look at their their engine room and their top five, if you like, on the batting perspective, all over 30. I think if you are going to win an Ashes in Australia, those five, I talk about Danny Wyatt, Hodge and Heather Knight and Nat Silver-Brunt and Amy Jones. And I think about that really experienced core of top order batters. And if you're going to win an Ashes series in Australia, I think this is your last chance to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course they're going to lean on Nat Silver-Brunt a lot. But I just feel that there is this element that's just nagging at the back of my mind to say that mentality of going in with the weapons that they've added, and we'll talk about Lauren Filer, I'm sure, but with the young fast bowling, the young fast bowlers that they've got, the world's number one left arm spinner, I think there is reason to be optimistic. I don't think confident. I think there's a reason to be optimistic that they can do this. They can. Difficult. Oh, God, yeah. And I am with you. I think Australia start as favourites. Of course they do, in their own backyard with the players that they've got. But I feel there's reason to have optimism, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's easy to say that Australia will retain the Ashes. But I think you're right. I think it's important to say that actually this is still a good chance for England to prove otherwise, because there have been weaknesses at times in the Australian armoury. I think at times their death bowling has looked a bit panicked and hasn't quite been able to execute what they wanted to, particularly in obviously T20 cricket. So it's absolutely not writing England off. But I think, as you say, because they are at home in Australia, they are slightly wounded. Australia would be favourites. But time will tell, because it's not long until we see it all pan out.
Yeah, absolutely. You talked about that one warm-up game that they played, and it was rained out, the Governor's General game, and only 28 overs or so were possible to bowl. Alyssa Healy looked in pretty good touch. Georgia Voll, I think, scored runs as well for Australia. Whether she gets a start in the Ashes, we will have to wait and see. It's probably... If Alyssa Healy is fit, then Voll will probably sit out.
But yeah.
what a player to have in the background to come in if necessary. People may take a look in isolation at the scorecard and think, oh my goodness, Lauren Filer, 2.5 overs, 0 for 33 or whatever it was. Apparently she could barely stand up because it was such a greasy surface. There was rain interruptions left, right and centre, and was struggling to sort of land. And I don't think that is genuinely anything to worry about from England's perspective. How do England... There's a worry over Kate Cross and her back spasms that she had, whether she's going to be fit enough to play. I don't think a decision has been made. I don't think I've seen one as yet. How do you think England's bowling lineup will look for this first one day international?
Yeah, I think that is a worry, because I think you would include Kate Cross in your ODI starting 11 because of that consistency that she brings you, that reliability, that experience. Because we spoke about it in the South Africa series, where England went in with Lauren Filer and Lauren Bell. And I think that does bring an element of vulnerability to them. So I think it has to be Kate Cross if she's fit. And then I think you're perhaps picking either Lauren Filer or Lauren Bell, going with someone like Nat Silver-Brunt and your three spinners. But those three spinners could be two spinners, and you could still play someone like Lauren Bell. So you could still go with that four seam attack with two spinners alongside there as well, which would be Kate Cross, Filer, Bell, NSB, Charlie Dean, and Sophie Eccleston. Looking at Sarah Glenn. What do you think to that?
No, I agree with you. I'd be tempted to... I think you've got to be aggressive, and I like the fact that the test match is at the end, because what you could have, of course, look, it could be 3-0, 3-0 Australia, or 3-0, 3-0 England, and the test match not mean anything towards the end. You can never, ever, and we'll talk again about the format in a few moments' time, the points, etc. That's just the way way it is at this moment in time, and you cannot legislate for how any of these games will turn out. And if it's a dead rubber, it's a dead rubber. What I do like is the fact that it's the White Ball series first, and that can actually, it could keep things quite close, you know, because only 2 points are available for each of them. So if it is, again, 2-1 or 2-1 and 1-2, then, you know, it's all on the test match and one side has to be aggressive. I think England should be aggressive. They've got a weapon in Lauren Filer. I think they should use her. I think the Australians found out about her in that last Ashes series at Trent Bridge, and she hurried one or two up. And with these quicker, bouncier pitches, perhaps that is something that England should really look to be aggressive and take the game. That to me says, we're taking it to you, Australia, rather than playing it a little bit more conservatively. Mm. I'm with you. I'd rather play the extra seamer because, you know, can the captain bowl? Yeah, I think Heather Knight is an option. If spin is an option, you've still got Charlie Dean and Sophie Eccleston. And I think the captain could bowl. At worst, Danny Wyatt could bowl. Yeah. Or depending on if Alice Capsey plays, she could bowl. And that's where I think England, selection-wise, have got a sort of little bit of a dilemma in that how do they go? Do they go with Danny Gibson or Capsey, or do they play the specialist bowler in Glenn or a specialist bowler in Filer? So these, I reckon probably 9 or even 10 of the side are sort of inked in. I think they've got to have a look at conditions in the North Sydney Oval as to how they actually go. But I would like to see England be aggressive and say, we've got this weapon, we're going to use it, and we're gonna frighten you a little bit. Let's hear from the England cap. Tammy Beaumont was having a press conference. She spoke ahead of the Women's Ashes, and she looked back, actually, to that drawn Ashes series in England in 2023.
I think both on and off the field, it was just an incredible series, and to come back from pretty much having to win every single game to draw the series, I think we were really proud of ourselves. Probably not, you know, elated and feeling like we'd won anything. Obviously, the trophy came back here to Australia, so I don't think you can feel like you've won something, but I think we certainly felt like we put a statement out there that we can go toe-to-toe with Australia and really compete, and also when our back's against the wall, that we can show a lot of character and come through and really kind of, play some really good cricket against the world's best. So, yeah, we were pretty pretty drained emotionally, I think, if we're honest. I think it was an incredible series, and particularly the way it captivated the British public, and we had sellout crowds throughout, and to play at places like Lords and the Oval with a sellout was just outstanding, and hopefully something we're going to see in this series as well. We've got so much talent in the squad now, and actually we've got kind of 18, 19 players involved, and, you know, each format's got a different squad. It just shows the kind of talent that's around in England at the moment, and certainly brought a very strong squad with a couple of people coming back from injury, of like Freya Kemp and Danny Gibson fully fit. I think it's great to have, you know, everyone firing, fit and firing, ready to go.
And after that, she then focused on how pivotal the test match will be coming at the end of the series and how potent England's bowling attack is.
Yeah, I think this test match is going to be a really unique challenge, actually. Obviously, from ball one, one team knows going in with a draw is probably enough, and the other team's got to do everything to push for a victory, and I think that could create a really interesting narrative. I think the key with test match cricket, from what I've found, and I haven't played much, but I've only played in one victory, so I think getting 20 wickets is the key, actually. I think nowadays the way we play with our batting, we'll score kind of quick enough, but actually it's how are you going to maybe create 20 opportunities to take wickets, and that's the key to winning test match cricket. I think that the hard thing is knowing you've got to push for those wickets, but actually not trying too hard and then just allowing the game to go away. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting, but I don't think the scoring rates will be an issue anything like they were in 2017. Yeah, I think our attack's looking really good. You know, the skill of Kate Cross, Nat Siverbrunt, and then the height of those two. And Lauren Filer particularly, I think, really ready to fire out here and obviously have a bit more pace and bounce in the pitches. We saw in South Africa that, you know, she was pretty scary. I was at short leg in the test match, and even I was thinking I need to take a step back here, and I'm not someone that ever takes a step back. So, yeah, I think it's great to see her, how she can go over here and really unleash her. And Lauren Bell's, like, just developing even more and more the last few years. So I'm really excited to see how our seamers go in particular.
As from an Australian perspective, Ash Gardner talks about the importance of the Ashes and how she wants the public to get behind them.
Yeah, I think this is such an important series for us. I think just the Ashes in general is such a big series. It's pretty much just behind a World Cup for us, in my opinion. So I think, yeah, to be able to get the support that I think is deserved for both teams. I think we've been so successful over the last 5-6 years, and it's probably one part of our game which we've been a little bit disappointed with is not seeing as many people as we would have liked. Obviously, to have the T20 World Cup 4 or 5 years ago now, and to pretty much sell out the MCG, and then for COVID to hit, it kind of put a dampener on what Australian cricket, I guess, the path that it was going. But fingers crossed, after a pretty successful men's test series, people can kind of come and support our series as well, because we're going up against our fiercest rivals and they just went against theirs. So yeah, hopefully going forward we can see some amazing crowds come and watch us.
Tammy Beaumont and Ash Gardner speaking ahead of the Ashes. And of course, there's one. I did like the way that Tammy spoke, actually. There was a confidence. I mean, she's a confident girl anyway. She's that sort of exudes. But I think England have that. It's not for show, if you know what I mean. They actually have a little bit of belief that this is a potential time, rather than an overhaul of a very settled side, given what they've done in South Africa recently. And, you know, the preparation for me in South Africa is pretty good. And it only seems like yesterday that they were playing in that test match. So I don't think they're going to be rusty in any huge elements. But I think what she had to say was, you know, stirring, but it just felt good to listen to.
Yeah, I think that's a key word, isn't it? Belief. I think more teams are getting that now against Australia. I think you look at a team like South Africa, who have really pushed Australia, and they just show what can be done if you do take a few risks and you are brave, as you say, with your selections. And they've obviously done it in the most recent Ashes series. They really tested Australia to the point where they won 2 white ball series. So they've earned that belief in a way. You can tell sometimes when people speak to the press, and it's often just hot air, isn't it? It's what they've been trained to say. But I think there's a lot to be said for it being genuine. I think the interesting thing for me was she spoke a lot about talent, how much talent they've got in the side now, which I agree with. But I think talent only gets you so far. I think now for this England team, it's about, we all know how much talent there is in that group. You don't need to tell us. We know that. But I think what a lot of England fans want to see now is results. And I think that's just where this side are at now. I think they've probably been, at times, they've been criticised heavily for the first time, and they're all just getting used to that. But I think at times that's been deserved. I don't know if you agree with that, Daggers, but I think it's absolutely about results now, isn't it?
It's and Ash Gardner saying, you know, in her interview that it is, you know, after world tournaments, the Ashes is the next most important thing.
Yeah.
And she's absolutely right. This is where you test. This is where you find out how good you are. It's all very well winning series after series after series after series, and that's great. And of course, it's good, and it's great to see England winning on that front. But you got to test yourself, and this is the ultimate test in the Women's Ashes. Where you are as a side and how good you are as a side is going to be found out right now. And I've been sort of critical of England, sort of saying, you know, talking a good game and doing all these things. When you've got to do these things when it matters, in World Cups, in World T20s, at Women's Ashes. You are building up. Everything for me is a build up to World Tournaments and Women's Ashes. That is what it is about. And you've got to perform when the moment strikes. And, you know, and we will find out. We will find out if England have got that talent and experience all wrapped up into one, and how much they do test Australia. Just on Australia lid, I mean, again, we were surprised at their performance at the Women's World T20, losing semi-finalists, which is really alien territory for them.
Yeah.
Still look at them and go, God, they're a fearsome side. I mean, they really are.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I suppose, yeah, when you look at them, the names, they just seamlessly, the names who have come onto the scene in the last 3 or 4 years are suddenly such key players for Australia. You think of Talia McGrath, Annabelle Sutherland, Phoebe Litchfield, Darcy Brown, Kim Garth, Georgia Wareham. Well, she's been around a little bit longer, but they all just seem to make the transition to international cricket very, very smoothly, to the point where they are so important in that cogs, or the cogs that move in that Australian side. I suppose the one concern is the fitness of Elissa Healy. She has been struggling with injuries, and I think for her, not just her role as a player, but as captain, as we saw with Meg Lanning, when they didn't have Meg Lanning, I think they were pretty exposed. So that for me would be quite an interesting one. If Healy goes down, how will they cope with that? I'm guessing it will be Talia McGrath who would step in and take up the captaincy.
It's an interesting point you make about that. Because actually, in the Women's Ashes last time, they were drawn under Elissa Healy's stewardship. Yes. In the latest World T20, they've not made the final. They've not won it. So that transition from Lanning to Healy has not necessarily gone all that smoothly. So I think there is a little pressure on Elissa Healy as captain of this side. And again, whether she makes it from a fitness perspective or not, we'll have to wait and see. But I think we mentioned about Nat Silver-Brunton, how the importance of her to England. I think Charlie Dean will have an enormous role to play for England in that fact. But then I look at a player such as Annabelle Sutherland and the 12 to 18 months that she has had. And you talk about coming on, players who have kicked on, and she is in that elite bracket now. And could be so dependent for Australia. Pink ball test as well, with the early doors, it can move around, and what a stabilizing factor she has become for Australia. And not that they rely on her, because they have got depth and a wealth of talent throughout that side, but just how she has taken on that mantle of being the all-rounder that they can rely on.
And she's you're right. I think we sometimes speak about players who come into international cricket and international environments and whether they get better or not. And in Australia, players seem to get better and better. And I think a lot has been said about the competition for places in Australia and how nothing is taken for granted. I think it was an interview with Charlotte Edwards, actually, with Nick from The Cricketer. It was really interesting. And she was saying how she felt that Australia's players are looking over their shoulders a lot more, which breeds that competitiveness, that competition for places, which I think spurs all of them on. Annabelle Sutherland, she's just a beast as well, isn't she? She's an absolute machine, bat, ball and in the field as well. I think she will be very, very key for Australia. They've not announced their test squad yet, have they? I suppose being the home team, they've got that advantage. They don't have to worry about flying people over and getting them acclimatised. So understand that. Whereas England have been forced to name their test squad, which, is fair enough because of the travel.
You just look at that. I mean, I'm just reeling these off the top of my head. I'm not going to list them, but you look at Elissa Healy or Georgia Vol, matters kind of not. They're both high quality players. And then there's Phoebe Litchfield, and then there's Beth Mooney, and then there's Elise Perry, and then there's Talia McGrath and Annabelle Sutherland and Ash Gardner. Whether they go with Megan Shute or whether they go with Darcy Brown or there's the spinners, the leg spinners in Georgia Wareham. Sophie Molyneux won't be involved. I think she's still injured at this moment, but Alana King as well. And I think I've just named 11 Australian cricketers who will probably start. And that is a scary, scary good side. So if England want to be tested, they really will be against that Australian side. Let's move it on just a little, because a lot of chat recently has been on the format of the Women's Ashes and the point systems. That's always up for a kind of debate. There's a question on that in a moment. But there's been a lot of chat about whether it should be increased to 3 tests. 3 one-day internationals and 3 T20s. Let's hear what Tammy Beaumont, but first Ash Gardner, thinks about increasing it to 3 tests.
Yeah, that's a bit of a hot topic at the moment. I think it's obviously everyone's going to have their own individual point of view on that, but I think just purely workload, it would be quite tough just with how busy our summers are. But personally, I would love to see 3-3-3. It's obviously going to make the tours a lot longer. I'm not sure where you're going to fit it in that time frame, knowing that we obviously have to play overseas competitions as well. So it would be interesting to see where over the next 4 to 5 years kind of where that gets to. But I know personally I would love to play more test cricket against England. Playing the one test kind of feels like a bit of a novelty sometimes. So I guess being able to kind of fight out more of a test championship, we obviously have some really good white ball games against England and other nations around the world, but I think the way that our two teams match up, I think it would be a really cool test series to see who would come out on top for that. But I don't think that's probably going to change anytime soon.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with Ash. I think I'd love to see 3-3-3. I think the best thing about the Ashes is the narrative, the rivalry, how it builds over time. And actually, you know, you saw in the India-Australia men's test series that the narratives build in a five-match series, and even in a three-match series, the kind of things with Bumrah always getting the same people out or things like that. And, you know, as an opening batter, that's part of why you love the game, is that battle of trying to maybe get one up on an opening bowler. And I think it builds even more in test cricket, and that's why I love getting the whites on. And yeah, I'd love to see more of it.
So Lydia, both players are adamant that they would encourage three tests in just the women's Ashes. What say you?
I think the first thing to ask is it logistically doable? And without harping on about England being in South Africa, they just got back before Christmas. They had to have a few days off, and now they're flying out to Australia. After this, they've then got the WPL, and then we're pretty much into the English season. So my first question would be, that's fine if you think you need to go that way, but how are you going to fit it in? Because the solution that I then had in my mind was, well, why don't you then just go back to three test matches, because that's what it used to be. When I played, my first Ashes series was, I think it was two test matches, but mm-hmm. before then it was, I think it was competed over three test matches. But then you have the argument of, well, is that what the fans want? Do the fans want just three test matches, or do they want actually the white ball stuff, because it's a relatively new fan base for women's cricket in some people's cases, and they like the T20 cricket.
But I think this is not just three T20s, three one-day internationals, but, you know, they're talking 3-3-3.
No, that's what I mean.
So logistically, yes. But do you think there's a thirst for it? Because, you know, you look at what happened two years ago in this country, and the crowds that were coming down for the white ball games, healthy crowd at Trent Bridge. Does that build up even more of a narrative, perhaps?
Yeah, I think it does. I think there would be an appetite for it, definitely. I think the players would want it. I think the fans would want it. I was only talking about would it only be three test matches just because of the logistical part of it. I think it's too hard to fit in 3-3-3, given what the schedule looks like in the women's game now with all the franchise competitions. But yeah, I think there would definitely be an appetite for it. But it's just a case of how do you fit it in? I mean, what do you... you know me, Daggers. I do go back to the argument of, if you're not playing multi-day cricket domestically, you're exposing your international players. But that's getting a bit boring now.
It's not boring. No, because I'll tell you why it's not boring. Because it's your opinion and it comes from a place of great experience, great knowledge, and wanting the best for the women's game. And that's one of the very few things we actually disagree on, in that I'm a bit of a sucker and I like it. I like the game. I like watching the women play test cricket. I like that kind of jeopardy about the fact that they don't play a huge amount of long form cricket. So what's going to happen? It intrigues me. It sort of sucks me in. And so, yes, I totally see where you're coming from, but we do disagree about this. I think if you want, or with anything, if you want it to happen and there's enough thirst for it to happen, then you make it happen. And I think it would be something I would try over here first rather than over there. I actually do. I think there is more, possibly more thirst for it over here than over there. And again, I do understand about the logistics. And obviously, with longer tours come more expense, you know, et cetera, et cetera, and time to fit in all the cricket. But I think in the women's game, and this just, all I'm talking about is the women's Ashes. You know, you're not going to do this every single time. You know, if India come over or if the West Indies come over, you're not going to do three test matches, three one days and three tournaments. No. I think just for the women's Ashes, because it is a little bit more high profile than many of the bilateral series that we see. Yeah. So it's an interesting one. I'm going to go, we've had some questions. I put it out on social media about if you've got any questions, the Women's Ashes to get in touch with us. I'm actually going to go to this one, and it's about points, and it's from WG Rumble Pants on Twitter, saying, does it make sense for a win in the T20s in the Women's Ashes to earn 2 points when a win in the One Day Internationals also earn 2 points? Would a better scoring system be T20s 2, ODIs 4 points each, and Test cricket 6 points? Now, I've done a little bit of maths.
Oh, God, daggers. Carol. Yes.
And there we go. Here is, you can't see it very well, but that is my little cheat sheet. There it is, back there. So I have done a little bit of maths on this. Yeah. As it turns out, if you did go 2-4-6, what happened in the Women's Ashes last time, it would still remain 12-12. Mm-hmm. If England won 2-1 and 2-1 and Australia won the test, it would still end up as a tie. Now that is not the only route to getting more points. So if you won 3-0 in the T20s and 2-1 in the One Day Internationals but lost the test, let's say, that would end up as 14-10. So I can see there'd be a more definite. What I have a problem with at this moment in time is that the test has a huge amount riding on it, especially if it's first. To actually win the Women's Ashes, I think it should be, there should be a little bit more element of jeopardy. But if you are not holders of the Ashes, then you've got to do supersonically well to get them back, right? So I like the fact that the test match is in the end. Now, could it be that with the test worth 4 points, the Ashes be over, the Women's Ashes be over by the time the test match comes around? Yes, it could mean that. Right? I.e. England having to get, you know, 10 points ahead or whatever it is, 10-4 or whatever. But I think that's the risk you take with any way of looking at it. I'm just going to throw this out. What if the test match was worth 2 points? Everything, every single game is worth 2 points. And then what you're looking for is a narrative. This is why the multi-format system was invented, to keep the narrative going for interest in the series. So if you make the test match worth two.
Yeah. Is that a mic drop?
It kind of is. Yeah. I'm going to drop something. I'll drop this ball that's in front of me here. There we go. I'm just trying to think. I think it's fine as it is now, but I think, say for arguments, here's what I'm getting at. I'm rambling here. My apologies.
No, it's...
Let's say the test match happens. And say it happens first, like it did last time. Australia win their test match. They're 4-0 up. That means England have to win 5 out of 6 white ball games to get the Ashes back. Australia only need to win 3 out of 6 to retain the Ashes. I think that's right. Or 2 out of 6, whatever it is, right? It's 2 out of 6. They need to win 2 out of 6 to retain the Ashes if you win the test match. Now, I know some would argue, well, if you win the test match, you should. But if you actually turn that round and make the test match worth 2, in a similar instance, then they are, you know, 2-0 up. And then England win 2-1 and 2-1. And I don't know. I just think there is a method to it. That's my answer. Anyway, I'm going to stop rambling and hand it to you.
Well, I mean, Rumble Pants is always good to read on social media. I do enjoy reading his points of views, and it's an interesting one. I suppose one thing we should probably flag up is are we talking about the point system because Australia have just been so dominant over the years? So it would actually be, it would be interesting to know if with these new point systems, historically, how much that would have affected the most recent results that we've had. Obviously, last year, if it was 2 points for the test match, that would have been, I think England would have, they would have won. No, no, Australia won it, didn't they? So actually, they still would have won it.
I'll give you an example. Sorry, Linda, I did do this match for a reason. I'll give you an example. Let's say in this, in Mr. Rumblepants's version of events, England win the T20 series 3-0. And then Australia win the one-day international series 3-0. So then that would make it 12 points to 6 for Australia. And with the test match only worth 6 points, England, it would be a dead, completely dead. And so does that seem right to you that you know, because it is all formats, should be taking one, should be worth the same. And so, that's what I was going on to say.
Well, I do remember when the test match was worth 6 points when it first came in in the first year, and it was just too many because if you won the test match at the start, you're fine. You're probably going to retain the Ashes or win them. So, it's something that I think we would always be debating because I think it's good to talk about it. I think my sense is it's about right now how it is. I do like your one though, Daggers, of 2 points for the test.
Just throwing it out there. And I dropped my ball. And let's see how that lands with everybody. Please get in touch if you think I'm a complete lunatic. Not generally, but just on this topic. So let's go through some more questions. Neil Kirtley got in touch with me on Instagram and said, who will be the top scorer and wicket taker for both teams? 3 Ashes tests or 1? We have just covered the latter, but who will be top scorer and wicket taker for both teams, Liz, in your opinion?
So, runs, I've gone Nat Siverbrunt for England, Elise Perry for Australia. Wickets, I've gone Charlie Dean for England and Alana King for Australia. My thinking is those four players, or my hope is that there'd be picks in all three starting 11s in the different formats. So, that's who I've gone with. What about you?
Yeah, I can't disagree. I think Perry and Nat Siverbrunt are going to be the leading run scorers overall. I'm going to go with Sophie Eccleston for England. I think I've got to go with her. I think it would be... just going on history and how good a bowler she is. As for Australia, I'm not as nailed on.
That was a tough one. You've also got Georgia Wareham.
Georgia Wareham was
my other
thought. They
might like her for her batting. She was someone who
I might be tempted to go with someone like Talia McGrath.
Yeah.
Who's going to play a lot, she hadn't bowled as much, but she, I'll go with you. I'll go with Alana King I'll go with Georgia Wareham. That's who I'll go with. I will go with Georgia Wareham. Let's just change it up a little bit. Ian Gade has got in touch with us. Now, for those who don't know, Ian Gade is one of our former producers at Sky, a top man. Thank you for getting in touch with us, Gady. And he asks this very sensible question. Can we have a section, Daggers Filofax, where you give us important upcoming events from your paper diary, but also random trivia about England's fast bowler? Filofax, Filofax. Yes, and you didn't think this would probably get asked, but I have asked it. And let me tell you, my car's going in for a service on the 27th of February. I'm just looking through the Filofax now. And I fly to Malaysia on Wednesday at 9 o'clock. So there's that. And also some random trivia is that Lauren Filer has a twin sister, Jodie. So there you go.
Brilliant.
That is that. Thank you very much. That is that question answered. Okay, let's move on. This is a question from our YouTube channel. And we do read all of the comments, etc., on the YouTube channel. So thank you for getting in touch. Although we don't know your name, somebody else is the handle. Somebody else 714 saying, is the England batting engine room in Beaumont, Wyatt Hodge, Silverbrunt, Knight and Jones. The ages 33, 33, 32, 33 and 31. The Aussie equivalent is Healy, Perry, Sutherland, McGrath and Gardner, 34, 34, 23, 29, 27. Given who appears to be coming through, like Litchfield and Georgia Vol, I know which camp looks to have the better short and medium term future. Is this a worry for England? Is this a worry? Do you think about the collective ages and they're all turning, you know, 30 plus together? How long they've got together? The injection of new blood, we've seen a little bit in Bouchier and in Alex Capsey, etc. But is that something that will be preying on the mind of England coaches?
Yeah, I think it's about how we can get the younger players of England in a place where they are getting better and dominating in the England side, like Australia have. Georgia Vol, I think, is a really good example. You know, she might get found out, you never know, but she's at the moment, she's someone who has come in and taken to international cricket really well. Alice Capsey, for me, would be in that similar sort of bracket, but I think for her, she's just dipped off in form. And I think maybe she's just lost herself a little bit as a cricketer. So my answer really is, I think it's how our young batters are managed. So Alice Capsey, Maya Bouchier, Sophia Dunkley, who I know isn't young, but she's someone who is sort of make or break. It's like, okay, well, what are you going to do to make sure you can perform at international level? Nat Sivabrunt, I think she can go for a bit longer. I think when you look at her, there's no reason why her and Danny Wyatt can't go for longer. Amy Jones as well. I think they're all, for me, it's not necessarily looking at their age, it's looking at their physical profile. And I think they're all fit. I think they're all very fit and very robust. I suppose Heather Knight is the only one who's had injury problems over the years. Tammy Beaumont as well, maybe. Is she at a point where maybe she's had enough because she's only getting into ODI and test squads now? I don't know. It's an interesting debate, but I understand why they're saying they would prefer to be in the Australian camp for obvious reasons.
I think it's just the way it has transpired that those five have been very consistent, and they have over the course of the last decade. There's been dips in form here and there, but of course that happens with any professional sports person, is that there is ups and downs, peaks and troughs, etc., hills and valleys. But I am of the opinion that I'm loath to get rid of people just because of age. If you're still good enough, and if you're still... I think it's for the youngsters to actually show and sort of say, I am better than the person who's got the shirt at this moment in time, and put in the performances. We have seen the introduction of people sort of gradually being brought into squads. So you look at Danny Gibson, but into the squads come Bess Heath, Saren Smale. Bouchier's coming, Capsey's coming, Freya Kemp's come in. And I think there is numerous players who are sort of in and around the environment, and they're just starting to make themselves a little bit more known. But until you're, you know, overall, yes, we have been critical of the performances of England as a collective in some of the recent World T20s and World Cups and stuff. In that Ashes series 2 years ago, they were absolutely sensational. I mean, they really were. They put in some wonderful performances. Granted, a lot of them stemmed from Nat Sivabrunt, but she can't help being a good un. People sort of say, oh, do you rely on Nat Sivabrunt too? Well, yeah, rely on her because she's that good. So what's the, you've got her, but what's the problem in relying on her? That is not to say that other people don't perform, they do. But I think I wouldn't worry about it. I'm loath to get rid of people just through age. If you're still good enough and you still have the desire and you still want it, then you, young'un, oust me from the side. You get me out of this side. But I like that there is competition, that there are players that are just knocking on the door and sort of making themselves known, which never used to be the case. So that's my answer to the question. We must crack on. But what I will say is that there are obviously three one-day internationals that are taking place. They kick off on Saturday, and it is England, Australia at the, oh, it's escaped me, North Sydney Oval is where the first one is, the Junction Oval in Melbourne for the second, and Hobart for the third. We will keep talking over the course of the Women's Ashes, myself and Lyd, and doing a little bit of review and seeing how much of our crystal ball gazing actually comes to fruition. Elsewhere, there is other cricket taking place. And Ireland, who had that wonderful T20 campaign over in Bangladesh before Christmas, they lost 3-0 against Bangladesh in the one-day internationals, but won 3-0 in the T20s. Ireland are currently out in India. What an opportunity this is for them. They're playing a one-day international game, which has just been concluded, the first one-day international in Rajkot. Ireland 238 for 7. India knocked them off with ease, in fairness. 241 for 4, 34 overs it took them to do that. Amy Maguire with 3 wickets for Ireland, and just falling short of a century was Gabby Lewis with 92 from 129 balls. Leah Paul 59 from 73. So an encouraging start, I imagine, for Ireland. This is tough opposition. This is totally different to Bangladesh. But, you know, scoring 240 against that Indian bowling attack, pretty good.
Yeah, really good for Ireland. I think considering that the conditions that they would have been in as well probably would have helped the fact that they've just been to Bangladesh. Was pleased to see Gabby Lewis get a score. Obviously, recently been given the captaincy, so it's always interesting to see how players take to that. But yeah, I know it's a win for India and it's a convincing win, but I think Ireland should be pleased with that batting effort, I would have thought. And I'm sure, as we always say, they would have taken plenty of learnings from how to go about things over in India, because it's a tricky place to go to and not just perform, but try and get a win under your belt.
Yeah, absolutely. Runs for Smriti, 41 she made. Pratika Rawal at the top of the order, made 89 from 96. That'll encourage India hugely. And Harleen Dial getting the start at number 3, made 20. So very good. Half century for Hasabnis, 53 not out of 46 delivery. So we'll keep across what is occurring in the Ireland versus India one-day international series over the course of the next couple of weeks. The 19s World Cup, I'm off on Wednesday, flying to Malaysia. Can't wait to go. I'm in a place called Johor, which is just south of Kuala Lumpur, about 3 hours south of Kuala Lumpur. He says this with authority, I haven't a clue. Never been before
in
my life.
You've been there before,
but
yeah.
I've been told it's 3 hours south. But what I have found out, thanks to Google Maps, is that don't get me wrong, I'm focusing on the cricket and I can't wait to see what goes on. When we did it last time out, it was such a joyous competition. It was fabulous. Just to see the youth go out, have their opportunity, and 16 teams as well. So giving an opportunity for some nations that haven't had necessarily a huge amount of opportunity in the senior World Cups, etc. Focusing on the cricket and getting to learn all about these players and their personalities and what they've got to offer, their talent on show. But I did see that I'm about 40 minutes away from Singapore as well, just over the border.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah. So just over the border, might take a day trip or a boat cruise or something.
Yes.
On a day off, and I'll take some work with me just to let people know that I will be working. But it's nice to get a flavour of a new place. And so very much looking forward to that. I would imagine India, Australia and England will be strong favourites in that 19th World Cup as well. So many have played senior cricket at the domestic level, especially in WBBLs and hundreds, and also in the WPL as well. Speaking of which, we still don't know when it's starting, the WPL, but it will be, we think, in sometime in February and finishing sometime in March. But I would assume it would be relatively soon after, given that the Women's Ashes is on. I would feel that it will start sometime close to the end of that, because it's quite a condensed Women's Ashes. It's all taking place in a very short space of time. And at the conclusion of the 19s World Cup, I think that's when it's going to probably start, Lyd.
Yeah, I'm with you as well. I think, the players who will be involved in the WPL in the England and Australia teams, I'm sure will be flying over to India pretty quickly at the conclusion of the Ashes. But it's just great that there's so much cricket now, isn't there? The Ashes, but it's not just cricket, it's quality cricket. Like, I can't wait to watch the Ashes. The WPL, I cannot wait to watch. I'm gutted to not be involved. But just the fact that we're able to see, you know, the best cricketers on show again, and also the domestic talent in India coming through. There's always two or three names that come through and suddenly they're in the India squad. So be interesting to see who those names will be this year.
Can't wait. There's so much to look forward to over the course of 2025. And we shall bring as much of it as we can to you, dear watcher and dear listener. Fingers crossed we can have a wonderful 2025 with lots of quality cricket and lots of hopefully quality chat. Hope you've enjoyed this first edition of the new year. And we look forward to your company next time.